Good morning, Northern Michigan. Welcome to Friday Faceoff here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by our good friends at Odawa Casino. Jerry Coyne is in studio with Keith Gave. Unfortunately, Rich Calkins will not be joining us today. We should be joined, however, by paddling legend Jeff Kolka, Keith, and who's back at it in an attempt to win another championship.
It's great to see him in a canoe again for this race, JC. And you could tell, I could tell driving into town today, the traffic is starting to pick up a little bit. So it's a weekend, obviously, but it's the weekend before the race. And gradually, this town begins to pulsate.
Yeah, Riverfest starts officially tomorrow with the car show.
Yep.
There's also a cool pancake breakfast happening at Mickelson Memorial Church. And then all the events that happen throughout the week leading up to the race on Saturday, which, of course, you and I and Rich will be right there at the starting line.
Yep.
One of the perks of working here.
Oh, and I appreciate the opportunity to do that. That start of that race, JC, is I keep saying it, the most exciting sporting event that I've ever seen. The start of this race, when the gun goes off at 9 o'clock and people pick up their canoes and race to the river and they all seem to arrive at the same time. It's
amazing.
Really,
you know,
cool.
I had never heard of it until we bought the radio stations, right?
Yeah.
And it's amazing how many people in Northern Michigan still don't know anything about this race. I live in Gaylord, and I belong to Gaylord Golf Club, and unfortunately, the men's invitational is exactly the same weekend as this. So I played in it for the first time last year.
Uh-huh.
It would probably be the only time I play in it because we didn't have a race at all. And so a whole bunch of guys were coming up to me and like, hey, are you a new member? I said, no, I've been a member here for 8 years. Well, how come you never played in the Invitational? I got the race. What race?
What race, yeah.
Yeah, the Asabo River Canoe Marathon. What's that?
You
live at Gaylord.
Listen, I got one like that. You and Cheryl are kind enough to give me a few extra VIP tickets, so I like to bring new people to this event every year. And I have a couple of good friends of ours, grew up in Kalkaska. I talked to his father the other day. On Father's Day, his father's 102 years old, and I had a terrific conversation with this man. It was sensational. Anyways, these people, they live in Grayling now. And I said, hey, why don't you come to the race with us?
What race?
They know about the race a little bit. They're at Kalkaska, he grew up. And I said, you've got to see this. And so we're bringing him Saturday to see this for the first time.
The 102-year-old guy?
I don't think he'll be here.
Oh, okay.
But his son and his wife will be
here.
Oh,
I'd love to.
You have to see.
It's stunning to me. And then you know the inverse is how many people are so involved in the race.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
You know, we'll look forward to talking to Jeff Kolka a little bit. Not only is he a champion paddler, but he's got a ton of great stories. So he better show up.
Yes, I'm looking forward to talking with him and speaking to the devil.
Oh. Step up to the mic. We were just saying, I said, you better show up, and here he is.
Well, you told me 10:15.
I didn't know Rich Calkins was going to not show up.
Oh,
so
see,
so you're stepping in a perfect spot here, but joined by champion paddler Jeff Kolka. You look fit, my man.
Oh, thanks.
So how's training been going?
Pretty good. Everything, you know, like everybody, you struggle with certain things, but you do well, you know, at different times, and you're learning and growing, and it's been a while since I've done it, so got to get back into the groove.
And you're paddling with, what, your niece?
Yes, my niece, Naomi.
Yeah. Naomi.
Yep.
Now, she's raced how many races till now? Like, is she three, four?
Three, I think.
Yeah, okay.
She started three and finished three.
So paddling has been a Kolka tradition.
Yes.
Your father was a paddler, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
How many other Kolkas have raced in the marathon?
Well, it would have put me on the spot, and I'm going to forget somebody.
92. You know?
No, but I have my brother Ted, my brother Mark, my cousin Greg, now I'm going to forget somebody for sure. I mean, it's going to be out there. It's been a little bit on and off with them, but
right.
It's in that area. So.
Go ahead.
Jeff, my cousin, Steve Watson, is another one that races, you know, me and there's family members and stuff like that.
I got a question.
Sure.
What was it like all those years having to carry Serge Corbin like you did?
Well, I have an old saying because when we would go to, like, New York and race out there, he was undefeated out there. And I says, you won't be remembered for winning with him. You'll be remembered for losing
with
him.
That's right. That's right.
Well, the amazing thing is that when you look at the record for the fastest races ever, you're third in a loss.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're second in a loss, too.
Yeah. No, but well, I mean, at the all-time fastest races of the marathon is the one that the fastest race ever is the one that Serge beat you guys by, what, 20 seconds, something like that?
No. There was 1994. We had extremely high water, and Serge and them, they beat us by a fair amount that year, Bill Taranjo and I. But Bill and I, we tried to give him a good run for the money, and we did. We did at times. 1993, Bill and I, some of my favorite memories are right there. We had a break and got out of town early. We basically set new records all the way down the river. We got Serge behind us enough. We just didn't get him far enough back. We got like four and a half minutes on him, but we had smashed a lot of records all the way down the river, and So the next year they had extremely high water, and almost all of our records that we set got redone. You know, and it hadn't did anything like that ever. You know,
And then the next year, that's when Serge approached you about joining him.
No, it was the next year I paddled with Bruce Barton. I got another second, so that was my fifth second in a row. And then in 1996, Serge called me up to want to do it then. So.
Uh-huh. And then you guys won, what, five, you and Serge together, right?
We won eight in a row.
Eight in a row,
yeah.
So, and then you took some time off.
Yeah.
So this is the first time, how many races have you skipped in your semi-retirement?
16.
16?
Just like my boat number.
Wow.
So, it's been 16 years since I've raced. 2005 is the last one.
Was there an itch, or was it more like you kind of felt like a responsibility to help Naomi, or a combination of both things? What's the impetus for getting back into the race?
Well, if you know my niece, she happens to have a way of getting away with stuff, you know what I mean?
She's a very attractive gal.
She's very attractive. Yeah. She's got these big, beautiful blue eyes. Right. And she's been working me kind of over some different coals. You know, Uncle Jeff, the first year I was born was the first year you won. And then she worked on different things. Who's going to do this, this, and that, you know what I mean? And but it's also something I guess if anybody was going to drag me out, it would probably be her. You know,
uh-huh.
And we're hoping to go out and do what we can, you know, as best we can, you know. So that's all we can do. But, yeah, she's did a good job at it. If you've seen her big blue eyes, you understand.
Damn those pretty women. But obviously a great athlete as well.
Yeah, she's very talented, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So where do you think you guys might stack up in the mixed competition?
It's hard to say. I mean, the marathon's a different race. Right now, there's a couple other mixed teams out there that one team in particular that's been beating us pretty regular this year. So Rich and Mary, they're moving extremely well and
uh-huh.
doing a great job right now. Yeah. So they'll probably be in front of us. And then there's probably some other teams I'm not thinking of right now that could be also in front of us
right.
as well. You know, I mean, but you know, we'll go out and do the best we can. It's a different race when it comes to that, but. You know, they got to be favorites and beating us by far. But they've been doing great just in the men's division even.
Well, go ahead, Keith.
Jeff, you mentioned water conditions. I spent a lot of time on the South Branch, which is real low this year. We've had a little bit of rain lately, but what will be the conditions on Saturday when you guys get out there, do you think?
I don't know, but right now this next week, generally it dominates. If we were to get the 90-plus degree days and dry air, it can start dropping.
Right.
But I think with the rains that we've had, it's up pretty good right now,
good.
I believe. So good. I think all conditions like that are pretty well right now. But it can change, you know what I'm saying? But it's going to take an awful lot of the warm days mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And I don't think we're going to be super high temperatures. We're not going to be in the 90s-plus
right.
for like 4 days in a row or something.
Right.
Then I think you start to see it dry out and drop. So I think it's a pretty good level. I haven't been on it myself like I should have recently, but got to get back out on it now. So.
What conditions are ideal? What do you look for? Temperature wise, moon wise, everything else.
I think everybody has a difference for their own personal things, and I like it like probably upper 50s, lower 60s at night. You know, it's kind of ironic, you know. This is always what happens to everybody. Will say this though. You know what I mean? Like after 2005, I think some of the most favorable conditions came into play for the next 10 years or better. I'm going, what the heck's going on here? You know?
Yeah.
And we would go through extreme heat nights, nights that were upper 60s, lower 70s.
Yep.
And 80, 90 degree mornings and days the next day. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then I remember years where there was heat lightning all night long.
Exactly.
Right. And it was like a strobe light. It was all this green hue that would light up everything, and then it'd be pitch black again. You know what I mean? So it was messing with your eyes.
I've got to imagine that's got to be difficult.
That was really, it was a different kind of thing, because then it would rain or something like that a little bit, but you had heat lightning, and it went like all night long. It wasn't just a little bit. It was on and off, you know what I mean? But you'd have a big flash, and you'd have a yellow-green hue to it, you know what I mean? And then it would
then go blind.
Yeah, and it'd be totally black again. So them are hard.
Yeah.
Some people like a full moon. I don't care for a full moon necessarily. It's just my personal preference.
Doesn't it make it a little easier to navigate the portages if it's a full moon?
Oh, there's a lot of things that can help with a lot. Going down the river and everything can help with a lot until you go into the deep corners with tall trees, and all of a sudden it's like somebody turns the light switch on. So there's a couple little things that there are hidden things, but for the most people, it works out good for people that aren't real familiar with the river and stuff like that. And probably this year I should be hoping.
Got to be great
for
the feeders, too. I mean,
well,
they
can help with all that. Yeah, they can help with all them. Generally, they've got most of that stuff down. I think they're so far, I don't know what they're calling for this year. Last I knew, it was supposed to be a full moon, but then I heard something about cloud cover.
Oh.
So that could change some stuff, too, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, how heavy the clouds are. I mean, it might be just right. It might give it just enough hue that it's not this big. It can be like a big bright beacon. And you can, when you're heading out, it can be just like shining your eyes almost like a floodlight. You
right.
know what I mean? So.
And what was it? 5 years ago, I think, they had the horrible storms where they had to end up taking a number of teams off the river for a while.
Yes.
And now, did you ever have conditions that were scary? You know, like very heavy wind, possible tornadoes, because that's why they did that. I think it was 5 years ago. They had a number of teams that finished, but there was a lot of teams that they had to pull off the river, and then it challenged their ability to have an official race.
Yes. My niece, her very first race, that's what happened to her. She was one of them paddlers that had to happen to her. I was at the finish line, and basically they come
it was
in
ugly.
The sky. Well, we're at the Whirlpool. It's one of the last landings before Oscoda, they call it down there.
Right.
And the National Forest agent, she come in and says, you guys got to be careful. There's tornadoes, warnings, all blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? All this stuff. The sky, and there was a big wall, and it was just black. We got back to Oscoda because she went through. And then after that's when they started pulling them off at that spot right there. They pulled all the paddlers off from there on out. We got down to the finish and waiting. It turned all a big green hue and everything in there, and the wind started picking up. I had an umbrella, and I literally had it turned at a 90-degree angle just to stop the rain from pelting you. The official timer's tent, what happened, and all his stuff, it blew right away. And everybody was holding down the other finish line tent and stuff like that. It was underneath it. They all had their arms on it, pulling down on it, you know what I mean? And my niece, I remember her coming in, and she was kind of laying about as low as you could to paddle in the canoe, because she sits kind of tall. She's a tall gal, so it's kind of funny that she did it. But she come in, there was a couple other teams that she said, if they're going, we're going to finish up too. And it was Lynn Witt, who's done it quite a bit. You know what I mean? So, but they were the ones that just went through before they called them all off because of that. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't have an official time for them. You know what I mean? They couldn't do it. They didn't have one. So.
Right.
That was a pretty scary
situation. But they called it an official finish, and they get So they
it's official finish without an official time.
Without official time.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was the right thing to do.
What's
the time, Mark? You have to finish within
19 hours. 19? I think it is.
Yeah,
I think it's 19.
You're right. I was going to say. I think it's less than 20 hours.
Yes.
For it to be an official an official race completed.
Right.
So, and I know when you go all the way, you want it to be an official
finish. No kidding.
Yeah, I tip my hat to anybody that sits in that canoe that long. I'll tell you that, you know.
Because you're used to 14 hours.
Well, I've been fortunate. I know it's going to be a lot longer this year, but I've been fortunate. I remember some of the days back in the day when it was longer than that, and that's one of your motivators. The quicker I get done, the quicker I get out of here.
Have you, you and your niece, Naomi, done a complete race? That's not how you train. Like you don't do a full marathon as a prep.
No, right. We do not. No, you take segments of the river and you just work on different segments of the rivers. All you can really do. I don't know. Some people paddle long hours, but no, I don't know if anybody that really does as a whole thing. I don't know about your recovery for that, something like that.
Yeah,
because you're paddling with pretty high intensity, so your body needs to recover as well. So,
right.
You don't go the full distance. I haven't anyways like that ever to prep work.
How long does it usually take you to recover your body to get back to feeling normal after a race?
It all varies. The better shape you're in, generally the better recovery you have, but also it's all how hard did you have to work and paddle in that particular race. Because we all go through adversity and stuff like that, and we have to overcome these different obstacles, and sometimes that takes more out of you than what you would really like, but that's just the name of the beast, you know what I mean? And your competition, you know what I mean, who you're paddling.
Sure. So. For people who are listening to this and really don't quite understand what we're talking about, we start in Grayling.
Right.
At 9 o'clock at night when the sheriff shoots the gun off, and you paddle for all night long, 14, 15, 16, 19 hours, all the way to the mouth of the Lake Huron, 120 miles of water?
Yep, 120 miles what they
claim. And how often do you get you pull over and stop and rest? You don't.
No, you don't.
That's what we're talking about here, folks.
No, there's no time for that. No. Yeah, he starts the gun, and then you get to start a canoe race with a Le Mans start, which you start running. You get to start a canoe running, you know. So you run down, and you got to put in, you know, the river, and then away you go. So then you're in the canoe for 5.5-6 hours. It varies on the capabilities of the paddlers, but you're in there from anywhere from 5.25 hours to 6.5 hours, 7 hours even, to get to Mile Dam. You know what I mean? You portage over the dam. Your legs have been sitting straight after you just did a run. So you get out, run over the dam, put back in, and you paddle some more. So
It's insane.
I want to ask you about the start of that race, because that's what gets me most excited. I mean, my heart rate, you know, explodes then. But
I hope mine doesn't this year.
I hear you.
Jeff, how old are you? You're 50.
Yeah, right. Okay.
50-something.
Close enough.
Whatever you are, you don't look it.
Thank you.
I would.
Is that a compliment or not?
You look 78, man.
See, there you go. I knew I shouldn't ask that question.
Go ahead.
A strategy? It's chaotic to us. Some of the canoes are several blocks away from the water.
Right.
As I said, the gun goes off and the pairs pick up their canoes one way or another and sprint or jog or whatever. Is there a particular strategy? Because they all seem to arrive at the same time.
Well, that's kind of ironic. Well, there's a lot, man. They've been starting now. I believe even this year, without so far, I don't know the Canadian teams, but we've been starting up 100 some teams.
You're
this
right.
Year it's going to be 80 teams or something, I've heard already. With the border closing, we still have a high thing. But the Canadians, there's a lot of Canadians that love this race, and they come here and full fold with their things as well. But the strategy is basically my main strategy always has been is to try to get in the water clean, smart, safe. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's running hard. They're all jacked up because, you know, the crowds get you going and you're all amped up. But you got to be smart and in control, because if you don't, you start making mistakes. And you could make a mistake at the start of the race that could cost you part of the race, actually, or something like that. You could destroy equipment, injure yourself. I've known guys that's blown their Achilles out even, you know,
and something like that.
So, I mean, so there's different things like that, you know, you want to try to minimize that stuff. And that's part of the whole game plan that you do. You try to minimize mistakes going down the river as best you can.
You get to the boardwalk there, and you know.
Yeah, now that you see the height of that anymore.
He hasn't been on the new setup yet.
That's right. But I mean,
I haven't jumped from it yet. No, and I don't think I'm going to jump from it.
No, exactly.
Well, when we first saw it, when we did the race a couple years ago, Keith and I, the first thing we said is, people are going to get hurt here.
Yeah,
the decking is well above what it used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, at least 2 more feet. Than it was.
I would say it's got to be real close to it. Yeah, yeah. It's a different situation. So there's a whole different strategy this year.
You got to make up your mind how far you run. You'd run all the way to the end of the boardwalk. Do you get, you know, you go back 20, 30 feet and get in where you got a little bit of an opening there? Do you put your butt down on the deck first and jump in, or do you just jump in, as some people do, and blow an Achilles or whatever?
Well you got to be careful no matter what it was. And like, there is a strategy, and I don't know for the new boardwalk the way it is, you know, exactly what to do. But you have to evaluate the situation you're in.
Yeah.
Try to be smart about it. And I thought, like you're saying, sitting down, and I says, my luck, somebody else will be right behind me and tunk me in the middle of the head, you know, with my
boat. That
you know
what I mean? Happens.
But we all, and it can. And it's generally non-intentional. That's why everybody's got to kind of put a perspective on it.
Sure.
Get it. Now, back in the day when I was competing, you know, on the higher end of it or something like that, man, you were down there and you were one of the first ones in, so you didn't have quite as much chaos,
right,
all right?
Right, right.
And so you, yeah, you it still was.
Stay ahead of the chaos.
Well, it's like the first 7-8 teams, and then there's a huge wave.
Yeah.
So
yes,
it seems
yeah.
like
yes.
that. So the
yes.
The actual apex of the guys that are going to command the possibility of winning the race are well ahead right away. It seems like the teams, you know, from 20 back, 20 to 60 is where the biggest jam comes in.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you have different capabilities. Like some guys are better or faster in a canoe, but then you have some guys that can run very well.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's their advantage to get some positions,
yeah.
you know what I mean? So it's all relative, you know what I mean? My goal this year is to try to put in as clean and smooth as we can with control, minimize our mistakes, mm-hmm. you know, and then see if we can start working our way through the pack and stuff like that.
Do you have, like, a time in mind? You know, we're going to talk about the Open Championship here in a few minutes, and a lot of times, especially if you're a professional, and you have been a professional paddler, with Naomi, do you think, like... 15 and a half, 16 hours. Do you have an idea of what you think it might take you to get down to Oscoda?
No, I haven't been able to dial that in this year. It's been difficult to try to figure that out this year. I would love to get in that ballpark where you just said. I'd be very excited to break 15 or 16 hours. I think a sub 15. When you break a sub 15, that's a milestone, and
that's
a lot
great
of people
for mixed teams.
Oh, that would be that
yeah.
No, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I don't. But I think for even a regular team to break 15, they used to have a stat of how many sub 15s that you raced. You know what I'm saying, and if
right.
you broke 15 hours, that was a milestone
absolutely.
For almost anybody. For the longest time, I mean, it's just a matter of getting your stuff together, and you have to have a very good race to do a sub 15.
Sure.
I'm hoping for, hopefully, we break 16 and a half. I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, you've got 7 races yourself that you broke 15.
Oh, thanks.
Right here, because they got the top 25 and they go from 13:58. That's the only sub 14 race.
Right.
Was when Serge and Solomon
right.
beat you guys by.
That was
8 minutes.
Yeah, see, they beat us that year.
Yeah,
that's
high water. That's the race I was talking about. So you
yeah.
have the, you guys had you have the third highest finish ever, and that was a second place finish.
Okay.
So
yeah.
that's amazing. But
so
yeah.
So what the second fastest race?
The fastest is the Surgeon and Solomon, the only ones that are sub 14, and then you and Serge did 14.4.
Yep.
And then you and Bill did 14.8 the year that
they
did 13.
Yeah,
so
yeah, we were a 14.
You guys were haul. I mean, you were the third fastest race of all time.
Yes.
And you didn't win.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it's just
every
just
once in a while. Like I have a golf analogy for that. Like Fuzzy Zeller shot the all-time course record at TPC and in Jacksonville, where they have the Players Championship. Unfortunately, Greg Norman shot 30 under par.
Unbelievable.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, I mean,
that's it's the way it happens. Those, you
exactly.
know, the conditions were right. They them guys are in tremendous shape, and they managed to pull it off. You know, yeah, 96 was my second best probably year of racing, and we went down and we were on track to kind of break it, but then we had some major headwinds down in the ponds and stuff mm-hmm. like that. It's the first time I ever had headwinds like that. It's you know, it's all part of the course, you
sure.
know what I'm saying? It's learning
sure.
and dealing with what happens, you know what I'm saying? So
when is when go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
Jeff, I've been following the race since about 94. I have not missed one since then, and I've had a chance to write a little bit about it for the Free Press, and Eric Sharp did most of it, of course.
Yep. Oh, yeah, Eric. Yep.
And the Dallas Morning News and so on. But the one thing I've noticed about paddlers is a pretty tight-knit, close community, isn't it?
Yes.
The guys seem to really admire, respect one another and so on, but there are some pretty good rivalries.
Oh, yeah. I will
pretty
say,
intense rivalries.
Well, I'll give you – it's kind of like it's kind of like a big community family like
yep.
type thing, but at the same time, it's like sibling rivalry going
yep.
on at the same time.
Yep.
So you have this great camaraderie, but yet at the same time, you have a fierce competition amongst each other.
Yes.
And generally, one thing about most paddlers, their mindset is that really, if my buddy or whatever beat me, then I got to improve myself to beat him next time, you know what I mean? And then you kind of just suck it up and take it like that, you know what I mean? Give or taken, you know what I mean? So,
but, and you take care of one another along the river as well. There's pretty good stories about people getting in trouble and paddlers pulling over and helping out.
Yes.
Some really good human interest stories.
They're amazing people. Like I said, the paddling community is one of the best I think you could do stuff around, family oriented in a lot of ways, there's a lot, there's a lot of different family names, what I'm saying, and stuff that's done it, but also just the they become one big family basically. And it doesn't matter, borders don't matter, anything, it doesn't matter, that you become comrades or whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it works out pretty good, and it's pretty unique, because like you said, if somebody's got some sort of emergency situation, the other guys are there to help out, you know what I mean? And it's...
We could do this for the whole hour.
I wish we could.
We've got other things to talk about. So when are you guys sprinting?
We'll be sprinting Wednesday at 4:12.
Okay. So, and for those that don't know, the positioning of where they start the race from on the streets are determined by the sprints. And obviously, the better sprint time you have, the closer you're going to be to the start line, and
unless you have
that's
to
part
run.
Of your strategy.
Yeah, if you can, if you were competing, you wanted to try to get in that first or second row for the, if you're working for the top spot, and the better, I look at it one way. In a way, it's less farther to run to the river, but it gives a fair breakdown somewhat for the people that that all of a sudden they don't draw numbers, and let's say a premier team's back in 80th spot to try to get going. So it's a very good system. It's like pole position for NASCAR.
Yeah, and the last thing is I, from what I understand from the 80 teams that are, there's very few Canadians that have actually are in the race this year. So it should focus on a local winner. We haven't had a local winner in quite some time.
No, well, Andy, it's been a mixed situation for the most part. And Andy, he's out this year, so that opens the door for a lot of people.
Sure.
Because Andy's the premier paddler right now in the U.S. and Canada, and Steve Lajoie is the other guy probably.
Yep.
And that could make sense, They're probably one and two.
You can see Wes Dean. It's been a long time since a local grayling paddler has hoisted the trophy, so the chances are pretty good this year.
Well, you got quite a good makeup, that's going out there this year. There's some good teams, and it's really kind of up in the arms yet. Like, who makes the fewest mistakes?
Yeah.
Who has things flow for them? Yeah. And your pit crews, and people don't mention that lot. They're one of the number one things. They're your lifeline.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that also make sure that you don't have these other emergencies and stuff like that.
Right.
And they don't get enough kudos for what they do. These guys go out there. They hurry up and wait. They got to wait in the cold water and sit there and wait and be ready and make sure they get stuff to you right in the right ways you got. And it's like a NASCAR pit crew. Them guys are so important to the rest of us paddlers. It's unbelievable.
And as bad as it is, as tough as it is for the paddlers and their crews, really tough on the spectators, right? Eric Sharp call it the world's most grueling spectator sport.
Yeah, they say that's the world's most toughest spectator sport.
You start here, you ended grayling, and you kind of party all along the way.
It's tough on the liver. There's no doubt about it. We know a few guys that it's been very tough on their livers.
You look at the crowd in Escoda.
We won't mention any names, Gator.
Look at the crowd in Escoda, and you can tell the people who started in grayling and kept going the whole night.
They have the same type of type of recovery that the paddlers.
They do, but they're diehards, and that's what they do. Yeah, it's pretty unique,
It's a great race. I'm glad you're back in it, Jeff.
Well, thank you very
Jeff
much.
Jeff Kolka, thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck with you and your niece, Naomi.
Well, thank you very much.
And you are Canoe 16 this year, is that
Canoe
right?
Canoe 16.
All right.
Sweet 16, still
what
there.
For?
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right,
care,
we'll
man.
Be back after these words from our fine partners on Friday Face-Off, brought to us by Odawa Casino on Up North Sports Radio. Do that. The NBA returns to the floor, Keith, and probably the most bettable thing left, other than I'll talk about some golf bets here coming up shortly. But to no one's surprise, or at least to not my nuts, however you want to say it, I'm not surprised at all that the Bucks have come back to even this series.
Nor am I.
We mentioned it yesterday on Game On Update about them getting beaten up badly a number of times in these playoffs, looking like they've been left for dead.
Finding a way.
Yeah. I mean, look, at Giannis is an unbelievable basketball player. They call him the Greek Freak for a reason. I mean, the guys that I hear from the NBA that are just shocked that what he did to his knee and the way he's playing now is just, you know, breathtaking.
Yeah, absolutely. And but you know what? What we've learned over the last several years, nobody wins an NBA title with one guy anymore, with one big superstar like Giannis. You need help, and Chris Middleton's been pretty darn good for that team.
Well, it hasn't really ever happened. I mean, even the great Celtics teams, Bill Russell was a fantastic winner, but he always has a ton of great players. Yeah. You know, John Havlicek or Bob Cousy to start with, and Casey Jones. And so you've had to have – I mean, the Pistons really are the ones that – I mean, Isaiah was a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
And then a ton of guys. No, I mean, Dumars really wasn't a superstar. He's in the Hall of Fame, but mainly, you know, as a player and as a front office guy, I don't think he would be in the Hall of Fame if it was just for his playing career.
I agree with you.
And Sal Rodman is in the Hall of Fame now, but a completely different player. And then the teams that they won with Larry Brown coaching, Ben Wallace just made it in the Hall of Fame. I don't think anybody else will. I mean, Rasheed was very good.
Absolutely.
Chauncey was very good. But they beat a superstar-laden Lakers team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Pistons have done it probably as anti-NBA model as anybody.
They didn't have a posse of three guys like most teams do now. Absolutely. No, you're right. Especially the last championship team. Ben Wallace, you know, it was a great, great, great defensive player, but nobody really considered him among the top players in the NBA.
Well, the reason why they won is Larry Brown. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, you like Larry Brown.
I like Larry Brown. Yeah. And they should have won again. If Rasheed Wallace hadn't made a defensive lapse, the Pistons win in six games.
Yeah.
And Larry Brown was the only one that could get Rasheed Wallace to play basketball the way up to his potential. Rasheed.
They cut Rick Barnes loose to hire Larry Brown, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Rick Barnes has gone on to have a pretty good career as coach.
Yep. Rick Carlisle.
Or Carlisle.
Yeah, it's all right.
Carlisle.
No, that's fine.
Thank you, yeah.
Yeah. And then, but what's his name? Davidson didn't like the fact that Larry got more press than the team did, and he didn't like that, and so he got rid of Larry.
Yeah.
So,
mistake.
Yeah, I know. Larry's back in coaching. He is working is it Memphis? I think Penny Hardaway hired him for his Memphis staff.
Yes.
And that'll be good to see coach again.
Yeah.
So we're back to a three-game series.
Yeah.
Two games in Phoenix, who has been really tough at home. Here's game five. What are the two most important games in a playoff series? They say is game two and game five.
Yeah.
If when they go to seven games, the winner of game five has got like an 89% winning percentage. So
they also say a series doesn't start until somebody loses at home. And if Phoenix holds serve, then they're going to win this thing.
They're going to win this thing.
Somebody's got to win on the road.
Yep, we'll. Each game has been a completely different animal, which has been cool to watch. So there's always something new that, as a gambler, you have to try to figure out what's going to happen next. The betting lines, the Suns are 4-point favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what I think about that. I kind of like the under again. The under is 220. I bet that and won last time around.
Mm-hmm.
As the series gets tighter, the defensive pressure gets racked up.
Right.
Now, some of these guys, they focused on keeping Giannis under 40.
Yeah.
Middleton goes for 40, right?
Right.
The game before, Devin Booker had a miserable night. He goes for 42.
He always responds.
He's a wonderful scorer.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be an interesting night on Saturday for the NBA. And you can bet all those spreads that we're talking about at Odawa Casino in the Sportsbook.
Yes, great. The one thing I've noticed, the ratings for the finals are down, but throughout the playoffs until the finals, the NBA had pretty good ratings.
Well, look at the markets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Milwaukee is
one of the five smallest markets there are, and it's too bad. But I don't know what else people are watching. I mean, when we come back, we'll talk about the Tigers returning to the Comerica Park in the second half of the baseball season. And we got a look at PGA Tour Golf, the Open Championship happening at Royal St. George's. Just wrapped up a great Finding Fairways about that that will run on Saturday and Sunday. Dan Pohl and I talking about Lynx Golf. And, of course, and we'll have Jake from the Get Around Guys here.
All right, good.
After these messages from our fine partners on Finding Fairways, brought to us by Odawa Casino in Mackinac City and Petoskey here on Up North Sports Radio.
A major has played overseas. Jackson, Michigan native Brian Stewart playing some great golf at the PGA Tour's Barbasol Championship in Kentucky. An 8-under 64 to lead the tournament after the first round. 9 total birdies and a bogey for Stewart. Also, the LPGA is in Midland, Michigan at Midland Country Club for the Dow Great Lake Bay Invitational Team Event. The Ryder Cup-style tournament entering its third round today. With last night's baseball game in New York postponed due to positive COVID tests, the Tigers will open the second half of Major League Baseball season this afternoon against the Twins at Comerica Park as they're set for a doubleheader to begin a 4-game set. And a bit of adversity for Team USA basketball, Pistons forward Jeremy Grant entering the health and safety protocols yesterday due to contact with Bradley Beal, who will not travel to Tokyo for the games. Grant not testing positive for COVID-19, and they believe that he will be able to remain with the team. Chris Villar, Michigan News Network.
Welcome back to Friday Faceoff, Finding Fairways Friday Faceoff here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by Odawa Casino in Mackinac City and Petoskey. And Keith, kind of a disappointing end of the first half. You know, we were talking about the Tigers had won 4 out of their last 5 series. They're playing the Twins, who had the second worst record in the American League.
They were last in the Central when that series started.
And they lost 4 games, 3 of them in very tough fashion. They could have easily have won 3 out of 4 of that series.
Yeah.
In some, you know, they hit a grand slam
to go ahead,
and then, you know, bullpen issues, and you know, the pitching injuries caught up with them a little bit. So we jump out of the gate with them and the Twins at Comerica Park. And I don't know what to say about what we're going to see. We like a lot of the things surrounding this team, but like I said, they've got pitching issues.
They do, JC. And when you think about how they finished, including that 4-game sweep at Minnesota, they finished since May 8th. They had a 31-27 record going into the All-Star break. And they did it. When you think about how they did it, it's pretty impressive. They were missing 2 starters for most of that time, Spencer Turnbull, Matthew Boyd, and their most versatile leverage reliever in Michael Fulmer, missing, right?
Right.
They have the worst middle infield in Major League Baseball. Shortstop, second base. They have a rookie catching tandem, and they still had a 31-27 run. It's pretty impressive.
Well, it should have been 31-24.
Easily could have been. But we don't know what's going to happen. We're probably not going to see Turnbull and Matthew Boyd until August. Another couple of weeks. We don't know about Michael Fulmer when he's coming back.
Some of these coming, you know, Manning came up. They sent him back down because they wanted him to pitch during the All-Star break.
Yes.
So I'm sure he'll be headed back.
Yes.
And we're going to see some other pitchers that have been in the farm system that are not 100% proven. Whether they turn out to be a help or a hindrance is a question mark.
Yeah, it is. No question about it, JC. And we got the July 30th trade deadline coming up, and we keep hearing some pretty big names in the trade rumors, which I hope don't happen.
Well, those are rumors. Yep. I mean, you and I have been talking at length about the fact that maybe Al Avila shouldn't do anything.
That would be my preference.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, Jonathan Scope is going to be dangled out there, but we're not paying him all that much, and we've got him for a couple of years.
Your middle infield is so terrible. The guy was a Gold Glove candidate last year. Put him at second base and leave him there and help stabilize the middle infield. Anybody can play first base or platoon with Miguel Cabrera. Candelario can come over there. They can find another third base. They have all sorts of options. They've got to shore up the middle infield.
Yeah. So all of the rest of the baseball season you can hear right here on Up North Sports Radio on Y101, either in Traverse City or here in the Grayling, Gaylord, Cadillac area, and also on 1110 AM. And we're things are going to ramp up for Miguel Cabrera as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And this past week, they had the Major League Baseball draft, JC, and they took a high school pitcher, kid out of Oklahoma City, first overall, a pitcher out of high school as their third overall pick.
I read an interesting article about that because, you know, the thought was that they really wanted Mayer, the shortstop. And most analysts thought that he would be the first pick taken. Mm-hmm. He's a 6'4" shortstop, that he looks ultra smooth. And Alan Trammell has seen this kid play a ton. He's a San Diego kid.
Yeah.
A lot of people liken him to Trammell, and the Tigers have not hit. We talked about this. Wouldn't it be great if the Tigers could get this shortstop that they haven't had in decades?
Yes.
But according to Trammell, with Job still sitting there, they thought his upside was better than the kid Meyer, who was taken the next pick by the Red Sox.
You know what? Then I'll take Alan Trammell's word for it. You know, you have to trust these guys. With a high school kid, especially a pitcher, there's so many years of development ahead. Arm problems, could be out of baseball by age 20.
I understand, but you know, he's 6'2", 220 pounds already.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds from what they read, I don't think he's going to be in the minors that long. I think you're talking about, you know, hopefully 2 years of just seasoning and savvy, mm-hmm. and bring him in. I mean, mm-hmm. It happens with everyday players. We've seen it
right.
with the Trouts and the Bryce Harpers.
Right.
Not nearly as often with pitching, but it has happened.
Yep.
And, you know, if that's what they get, well, we'll see. This could be one of those things that we're looking at Job and Meyer for the next 10 years, right?
Yeah, we will be. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Shifting gears, as we mentioned, we've got the Open Championship happening right now. Damn it. Why don't we have TVs in our studio?
Where's our monitor?
No, I know. And we got a full hour breakdown of it on Finding Fairways that'll be here at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning and Sunday morning on Up North Sports Radio with me and Dan Pohl, Vardon Trophy winner and Ryder Cupper, quite probably the greatest Michigan professional golfer. It's either him or Cal Pete.
Both pretty darn good.
Yeah, both pretty darn good. He predicted Colin Morikawa would win, and right out the gate, Morikawa has an unbelievable morning. Shot 6 under mm-hmm. today and is leading at -9, but Jordan Spieth has already made 2 birdies in 7 holes.
He's coming fast, yeah.
Yeah, I liked Spieth here a lot. I told you that.
Yep.
I bet him to start. And then Louis Oosthuizen is right there, birdied his first hole.
Yeah.
So he's at 7 under. I also have them. And then you've got a number of players. You know, Paul Casey's having a pretty good day. He's 2 under. He's 2 under for the day, 4 under for the tournament. Tony Finau was 4 under today. He had a pretty good day. And then there's some guys in here that I liked a lot. Unfortunately, like Stuart Sink, bogeyed the first hole. I've got money on him. Justin Rose hasn't teed off yet, so it's going to be an interesting day. Koepka already 1 under after 2 holes today. Watch out for Koepka. He's just dangerous in the majors.
A question. Go ahead. Do your notes there say how Bryson DeChambeau is doing with his driver?
Well, I heard the guy, he's not going to have a contract from Cobra very much longer.
It doesn't sound like
DeChambeau's even today after 3 holes. He's +1 for the tournament. He's under the cut line right now. But
this guy is.
There's a few of them out there, but what is the old saying? It's a poor craftsman who blames his tool.
Exactly.
However, you know, this is not the first time you've heard this. I remember when Phil and Tiger were going at it big time, and Phil used to say, "Just think how good Tiger would be if he wasn't using inferior equipment." Which he was. Nike didn't know anything about making golf clubs.
Wow.
You know, if Tiger, it didn't matter. Tiger won everything, but how much better would he have been if he'd been playing Titleist or Callaway gear?
Yeah.
So I've never heard Tiger ever mention it, though, because Nike paid him a lot of money. So, you know, the best thing about this, we were talking yesterday, Keith, is no matter – I can get up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Watch
you know, normally I would – on Saturday, I would look at the alarm clock, go, I can sleep for a few more hours. It probably won't happen if I get up early. I'm going right to the TV, and it's always going to be fun to watch. So you can bet on FanDuel or at the at Odawa Casino on these golf bets. I like it. I mean, you're talking about I bet Sergio Garcia. I told you I was going to do that because everybody's talking about John Rahm, and I kind of like him. So I bet $7 on him at +5,500. So if he wins the tournament, I'm going to win $390 on a $7 bet.
Nice. Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
So it's a good investment. It's a lot of fun, not a lot of upside for not a lot of downside.
Sure.
When we return here on Friday Faceoff, we're going to get on the phone with Jake from the
State
Record
Farm.
Eagle Sport. Oh. Jake from State Farm. Oh no, something bad's about ready to happen. Don't. Jake from the Record Eagle Sports Department and the Get Around podcast here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by Odawa Casino in Mackinac City and Petoskey. Welcome back to Friday Faceoff here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by Odawa Casino in Mackinac City and Petoskey. Jerry Coyne in studio with Keith Gave and Jake Atnip from the TC Record Eagle Sports Department joining us and the Get Around podcast. Good morning, Jake. How are you?
Good morning. It's a great Friday. It's Friday, so you never can complain, right?
Well, especially when it's sunny after the kind of rain we've had for the past week or so, and it looks like we're going to have some great sunshine this whole weekend. Are you a golfer?
Oh, I am beyond a golfer. I golf all the time. So I can't wait to get out there this weekend. I was already out there once this week, and I went out two times last week. So it's been beautiful for golf here in northern Michigan over the last couple of weeks, honestly.
So what was the first thing you did when you woke up this morning, Jake?
I actually went inside. I took a nice deep breath. I'm actually going to go kayaking this morning before I get kicking in the sports department later on tonight. So I'm going to take advantage of the outdoors a little other way.
So you didn't turn on the coverage from the Open Championship?
Not today. Yesterday I did, and all the guys I was rooting for kind of didn't do so hot. So I'm hoping if I don't watch it today, they make the cut and they can turn around on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, there's some of the players that people were focusing on played well. A lot of the other ones haven't. You know, the Bryson DeChambeaus, Rory McIlroy having another struggle in a major, which is kind of baffling. Xander Schauffele not playing very well. But then some of the other guys that you were targeting, like Colin Morikawa at the top of the page and Jordan Spieth, this is shaping up to be a great tournament. It will be no matter what your favorites are or aren't in the mix.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you talk about just a couple of those guys at the top, I mean, like Louis Oosthuizen and Jordan Spieth, I don't think anybody really expected them to be at the top after day one. I mean, Jordan Spieth has been kind of up and down lately, and for him to kind of come out and, I mean, put John Rahm and Rory McIlroy and, I mean, literally all the top five DJ, put all those guys in his dust. I mean, you know how hard that course is out there, and like you said about somebody like Rory, it just is kind of surprising because, you know, him being from overseas and playing in that European tour before he ever got over here, you know, he's struggled for quite some time now. And it's kind of hard to see. I mean, he's falling kind of out of that top 10 ranking, and you wouldn't have expected that from Rory in the last few years.
I agree with you. I don't know what's going on with him. I know he's got a new swing coach, and, you know, he's still really young. There was so much predicted of him. You know, when Jack Nicklaus says you're going to win 15 majors by the, you know, when you're age 23, 24 years old, it might put a little bit more pressure on you. Things change when you become a parent in the golf business, especially. But yeah, no matter what, I love this golf tournament because you can watch it all, Keith, and get on with your day.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you're 5 hours ahead. You wake up early, and then you're just like, hey, you know what? We got a little bit of golf to watch.
And then we got a little golf to play.
That's right.
Right, yeah, you get 18 and after the fact.
Jake, I know it's a kind of a quiet time for local sports. What are you guys looking at the TC Record Eagle?
I have to bring this up because I just did a little story on it last night. I mean, the summertime is really, you know, baseball time here in Traverse City with the Traverse City Prince Bitters. And, I mean, oh, my gosh, they have been on an absolute tear this week. They lost four games in a row last week, which, according to my records and looking back in Northwoods League records, that was their longest losing streak as a franchise in the last 3 years. So they were, quote-unquote, down bad last week, and they rebounded incredibly this week. Since Monday, they are 5-0 since Monday, and they have outscored their opponents 67-16. They have scored 67 runs in the last five games, including a doubleheader yesterday. On Tuesday, they scored 22 runs against the Rockford Rivets in like a 22-9 win. And on a Wednesday, they came home and they beat the Battle Creek Bombers 23-6.
Wow.
So in the course of 48 hours, they scored 45 runs, which is just absolutely out of this world.
Do the Pitt Spitters play baseball or slow-pitch softball?
That's what it sounds like, right? But I think that's one of the big things, and I talked to my coworker Andrew Rosenthal about this yesterday, and you know, I think the Traverse City Pit Spitters have done nothing, and I mean nothing in the last 3 years, to tell me otherwise than they are the best and the premier team in the Northwoods League since they got started 3 years ago. They won that championship in 2019. They went on an 18-game winning streak right around this time in that season. Last year, of course, the bubble kind of messed everything up, and it was a little wonky, but, you know, still they performed at a very high level. Didn't get a chance to play everybody else, but they're more or less defending their championship this year. And when they go on a tear like this, you know what that does for confidence in baseball. When just yesterday they had, or on Wednesday, they had all nine of their batters in their starting lineup have an RBI and multiple hits, wow, which for confidence, that you can't ask for much more. For going into the later stages of the season, you can't ask for much more. They already clinched a playoff berth because they won their division in the first half of the season. Their All-Star game and everything, their break is just coming up here shortly. But the first half of the season ended last week. They already clinched a playoff berth, so they're kind of playing with house money. And they started off the second half of the season like 2-4, but they've since won five straight, and it seems like there's no stopping them at this point.
So, Jake, what do you attribute to that? I mean, I know they bring college players in. Are they just better at recruiting some of these college players, or is it the fact that maybe these kids want to play in beautiful Traverse City over the summer?
I did a couple of stories, and I've done a lot of asking these kids over the last 3 years. Hey, like, why here? What are you coming here for? I mean, Traverse City is a brand new team. You know, it's Northwoods League. Why here? And like you just said, it being Traverse City is a huge plus. I mean, nobody can really be mad about spending their summers in Traverse City. We got kids from like Georgia and Texas and all this stuff.
Right.
And they come up here, they're just like, man, this is perfect. This is my 115 degree summer in Texas, or I'm not sweltering down in Georgia. But I think the big thing, and what I've noticed, is that Coach Josh Reban and, you know, Mickey Graham over there have created a certain culture in Traverse City. Obviously, it's a winning culture, which everybody wants to be a part of. Winners, you know, get looked at more. Winners, you play better, you know, you have more confidence. And they obviously have a winning culture here in Traverse City. I think it's very easy to see that, you know, Josh Reban is a player's coach, and he really does it for the guys. Every person I've talked to has just gone over the moon about Josh and his care for the kids' development and for it to be a developmental league. It's not just, hey, come play, I'm going to use you for your skill. It's like, hey, we're still going to score 23 runs in a game because even though it was 19-4 in the ninth inning, we're still batting, we're still learning, we're still being competitive. And that's what a lot of them have told their friends. I mean, we have seven returners who have been here for 3 years now.
Wow.
This season, which is just almost unheard of in the Northwoods League. I actually talked to the chairman, Dick Raddatz, at the Northwoods League a few weeks ago, I think maybe about a month ago, actually. And he told me he doesn't even know if it's ever happened before. And that's just in the 3 years that we've had this, Northwoods League franchise here in Traverse City, that they already have just the recidivism of people coming back and coming back and coming back is off the charts for the Northwoods League. And I think that just speaks volumes to the culture and even the coaching staff that's around, because, you know, if you go somewhere and you have a good experience once, you're definitely going to come back. But these kids are coming here, having a good experience, and then telling all of their high-level college buddies to, hey, you should come here and play in the summer too. Don't screw around with all those other teams. Come into Traverse City, you're going to win, and you're going to get better when you leave here.
Jake, the Major League Baseball held its annual draft this year. Was there much talk among the players about the draft? Were they inspired a little bit maybe by what was happening in Major League Baseball this week?
I mean, if we sit around and we look at the pit spitters, we had three pit spitters, former pit spitters, drafted in this year's MLB draft. Right. So these guys know that they are here for a reason. And when they come here in the summertime, they're trying to get looked at. They're trying to get better. And there are plenty of Major League scouts who come out to these Northwood League games all over the Midwest. And they know it. I mean, you're looking at Luke Little, Andrew Morrow. I mean, these guys have, you know, all these guys have been drafted. And when they were sitting here in the pit spitters, you could ask Josh Reban, and he'll look and he'll say, you know, I could see any one of these guys getting drafted in the MLB draft. And I think that attitude that they have here, that, hey, you come here, we're going to prepare you for an opportunity like that, that also gets the guys excited to be here. And I do think that, you know, this week they have a lot of people who they know. And once again, these three-year returners, they can't help but fire up those younger guys and say, look, guys, all these guys who have came here and been through this particular program, this franchise, are going on to bigger and better things. Put your head down and work. You can do it, too. Everybody likes to be able to follow the leader. And when you have now, it's four guys in 3 years who have been drafted to the major league. That's just impressive.
Yeah, that's a great story, Jake. Thanks for following up with us. We were going to focus a lot more stuff on the Pitts Bitters, and then we became the Tigers affiliate in Traverse City, so it kind of ate up a pretty big hole. I know Mickey very well. He's a great guy, and it's good to hear those success stories. And so very briefly, what's the Get Around podcast this week?
We're going to be talking about getting through. We have a lot of all-region teams. We're dead in the middle of our summertime. Our golf and softball all-region dream teams are coming out this week. Next week, we'll be having our tennis and baseball all-region teams. And the following week after that will be our soccer all-region teams. So we're going to be talking about a lot of those nominations, why we put those kids up, and who's going to be where. Those two teams who come out this week, you'll be able to pick those up in the Record Eagle. The next week, we'll probably chat more about those. So we'll tease out to those all-region teams a little bit. And there'll be another big announcement coming on the Get Around this week, so make sure that you tune into the Get Around if you can.
Oh.
Big announcement at the beginning of the show. So,
tell our listeners where they can hear that podcast, Jake.
You can listen on iTunes, on SoundCloud.com/TheGetAround. If you go to our website at record-eagle.com, right there on the local sports page, it's sitting right there in the player. I don't think you'll be able to miss it. If you find our socials, it's pinned at the top of all of our socials. It's an hour long each week, and we have a lot of fun. We bring on local athletes. Next week, we're going to have Mark Ewell, the director of the MHSAA. After all that has gone on with the coronavirus pandemic, we finally got a chance to sit down with the executive director. So it's going to be a great episode here this week, and you need to make sure that you tune in.
We will do so, Jake. Thanks for joining us here on Finding Friday Faceoff, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jake.
All right. Well, anything left for you, Mr. Gave?
Just one quick thing. By this time next week, the Red Wings are going to be short a player. They're going to lose one to the expansion draft next Wednesday. The teams can protect 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and a goaltender, or 4 forwards, 4 defensemen, and a goaltender. All the way you look at the Wings roster, they're going to go 7-3-1 and probably lose either Vladislav Namestnikov, the forward, or maybe Troy Stetcher, the defenseman, maybe their best puck-moving defenseman. I wouldn't like to see that, but it looks like they're going to leave available Danny DeKeyser and Troy Stetcher on the defense. So, yeah, and it's going to be very interesting. Every team's going to lose a player to the Seattle Kraken, and then a week from today, the NHL draft.
So, yes, well, you're going to be piddling in your pants.
Yes, sir.
With all the hockey and the canoe marathon all on our doorstep next
week.
Great
week coming up.
Yeah, we will be broadcasting live next Saturday from 6 to 9 p.m. at the start of the canoe marathon on our sister station, Q100, which you'll be able to hear all over our network, which is 106.3 in the Grand Traverse area, 94.5 up in Petoskey and Charlevoix, and all the way up into the Sioux and the original Q100 here in Grayling. So if you want to, if you can't make it to the race and you want to get that flavor, Keith and Rich and I will be bringing it to you, and it's always a great time.
Absolutely, and I want Rich Calkins to feel better, too.
Yep, and don't forget, like I said, if you like golf, then tune in here tomorrow at 9 o'clock, either tomorrow or Sunday, for Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Have a great weekend, and I'll be broadcasting live. I don't know if Keith is going to join me or not from the Iron Pig. Yeah, no, I know you will. But either way, I'll be live at the Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord. There'll be a ton of things to give away. So if you're anywhere near the Gaylord area, come on in, and you're likely to win something cool. You might even win a canoe.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
I think is going to have to play well. Philadelphia, I think, is somewhat uncertain in what they want to do. We probably